The date is the 6th of April. The interview is taking place at Cinnamon Court in Deptford. The interviewers are Marigold Hughes and Susan Leidensdorf. And the interviewee is Jean. Jean, can you tell me your surname, please? Muddle. Yeah. And is that M-U-D-D-L-E?
M-U-D-D-L-E.
Brilliant. And the interview is for the grandchildren of the Pitt Project. Jean, first of all, can I just ask you, whereabouts you lived during the Blitz?
Payne Street, Deptford.
Payne Street, Deptford, okay. And what was the year that you were born in?
1931.
And what can you just tell us a little bit about your first experiences of the bombing?
Well, tell you the truth, it didn't worry me. It didn't worry me because we were down the Anderson shelter. My mum had everything down there for us, like games and everything. And she used to tell us stories. And when the big guns started, you know, they used to frighten you a bit. But next morning, all we wanted to do was go out and see if we could find any shrapnel. Really, it was like a game to us, really. Mm. But then when we got older, of course, we did know then. When the flying bombs started, that was when it was bad. Mm. Because you never knew where it was going to hit. Mm. So you had to, couldn't go far from home then, you know.
Sure.
But apart from that, I mean, we, as I say, we was in the Anderson shelter. And would you like to know about the Anderson shelter?
Please.
It had two bunks in it. And I had one and my sister had the other one. My mum had captain's chair down there. So she just had an eiderdown round her all night. She didn't go to bed, but we did. And we used to get undressed and go down there. And then she had one of them, a paraffin stove. It come up like that. And she'd have the kettle on there and she'd make us cocoa and biscuits of the night. And then she'd put the porridge on for the morning. And she'd half cook the porridge. Then she had a big biscuit tin with hay in it. And she'd put the porridge in there, still in the pot, put it underneath the bottom bunk, and by morning it was cooked. Because just hay cooked it, like, you know. And she'd fill the kettle up again, and we'd have a wash down. And when the all clear went, we went up back indoors and got dressed. But she'd play Ludo's with us and all that, you know. Because it had a shelf all the way around it, so all the games we had was books, what she read us there. So, I mean, it must have been awful for my mum, because she must have been worried to death, you know. But I know when my dad came on leave, and he came home, and there was an air raid on, and he said to my mum, "My God, how do you manage with this?" And he would come home from Belgium, but he said, "How do you manage with this?" And she said, "Well, you have to, you know." Mm. But, and of course, the food rationing was bad. It was really bad. But we never went hungry. My mum always managed somehow or the other. Mm. We had chickens. So to have chickens, you had to give up your egg ration. So you could buy maize for the chickens. And things like that, and but then when the chickens wasn't laying, one chicken wasn't laying, she'd kill it and we'd eat it. And we had a couple of rabbits in the garden and all, and she'd do that as well. But I mean, she made wonderful things, really. I mean, I've tried it since. She used to get, because corned beef wasn't on the ration, so when you got your meat ration, if you had any corned beef in, he would give you a few slices of corned beef. And my mum used to make a batter and dip the corned beef and make corned beef fritters. I've tried and tried since then and I cannot do it. The corned beef can't be the same now because I can't do it. Mm. And Spam fritters we used to have. Mm. And we used to go out and if anywhere was bombed out, like, and they was pulling them down, we'd go and get the wood because coal was very short. Mm. So we had to get wood and my mum would chop it all up and that, you know. Well, when I was a kid, I can't tell you how many schools I went to, because you'd go to a school one day, you'd go next day, and that school would be blasted, so you had to go to another school. So you were never in the same school for long. And only once we had to go to the Catholic school, and my sister fainted three times because the siren went, and they had a cloakroom, that's all, with bricked-up windows, was their shelter. And the priest come over with the incense, and my sister couldn't stand the smell. And they was horrible to us there, because we had four cousins there, because they was Catholics, but we weren't allowed to talk to them, and they couldn't talk to us, because we was them bloody Protestants. But, you know, I mean, as I say, we weren't at one school very long. We was evacuated.
Yeah, can you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, what it was, I can barely remember it, because I'd been in Devon for 6 months, because I had measles and I got it in the eyes, and they sent me convalescent. And this day they sent me home with a label round my neck, put me in a guard's van, which they would never do now with a guard, and sent me home. Got indoors, next morning there was another label put round my neck, and I was sent off with my sister to Tunbridge Wells, convalescent, evacuation. It was all right there, you know, but then we lived in this big house called Ferndown Point, and I caught Infra Tiger, and I had it all over my face. And my mum said that she heard me crying. So she said to her mother-in-law, "My Jeannie's crying, I'm going down." So she got the paper train down there early in the morning, and I was. And I had a face full of scabs, so she brought me home. And I had to wear a mask for 3 months, because my doctor used to, his wife give us, sent down pillar slips, and she cut the holes in, and I used to have it all this ointment and put it on. I can remember smelling the ointment. It was like a sweet smell. It was in a round wooden box like that. It was pink. But then we went to Lancashire, evacuated, but my mum come with us there.
Okay.
So that was better there.
And how long were you in Lancashire for?
We was in Lancashire for about 6 months, and my mum wanted to come home. Well, she wouldn't have, but we had this house, and it was in the side of the mountain, so there was no back to it. You come out the street door, you went up the road, up a flight of stairs, and there was four toilets, and they was for the street. Then four toilets for the whole street. And then we went out one night, because we never went out, and they said to my mum, this woman said, come to the show. So we went, and when we come back, as she put the light on, all the walls was moving like that, and they was just black beetles everywhere, cockroaches everywhere. My mum had us up and packed next morning and back to London. And she had it was a nice little house, don't get me wrong, you know, but it was all stone, see? It was built into the side of the mountain. So, but we loved it down there, you know, because go up to the mountains and that, on nature walks and that, you know. But no, we didn't like to see them black beetles. Yeah.
So, Jean, you started, when the Blitz began, you were in London, yeah. And then you briefly went to Tunbridge Wells and then went to Lancashire. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we came home and then we stayed at home. That's when we was down the shore, we'd go down the shore. When it got so bad, the raids, when it was nearly every night, my mum used to make us get undressed, washed, and we'd go down the shelter before the air raid warning went, and we'd stay down there till it was all clear in the morning. But we used to have our tea down there and everything, you know. But she made it more like a game for us, like, you know, same as she did with thunder and lightning. We never knew when we was kids that my mum was frightened of thunder and lightning, because we used to play this game under the kitchen table with the sheet right over the table, and she'd say, "We're going camping." But she was frightened, petrified of thunder and lightning. But we never knew. So we wasn't frightened of it when we grew up. So that's what she'd done in the air raid shelter as well, you know. She made a game of it. But my brother wasn't with us. he was evacuated to Rootham. But when we was at Lancashire, my dad brought him down to us because it was right near the aerodrome, and the aerodrome got bombed, and my dad brought him down. And he thought it was funny. "What a funny little house," he said. "Who's them two girls there?"
So when he was separated from you, how was his experience of evacuation? When he went, sorry, where did he go again? What was the name of the place?
Rootham.
Rootham. What was his experience like when he was there?
What was it like?
Yeah, like, did he have a good time there?
Well, no.
No.
No. That's why my dad brought him down, really. Not only because the bombing, because he got frightened in the bombing and he wet the bed. And they draped the wet sheet over his head, made him stand in the corner. And my dad went to see if he was all right. And he said, "Get him dressed." My dad brought him in his little overall. No other clothes. He left them all there. Brought him to Lancashire. But he was. He took him a long time to get used to Lancashire, because he was with all the little children there. See, but he went to Rootham before the war broke out, because they said, if somebody knocked on the door or come in, he'd get behind my mum and hold her skirt. And they said he should mix with other children. Because I was 7 and my sister was nearly 9. You know, he'd need to be with smaller children. So that's why she let him go.
Okay.
But he got used to it in the end. Yeah. And then, of course, we come back. And then when we come back, the flying bomb started.
Just to go back to the air raid shelters, Jean, were you, more like the air raids, were you ever frightened? Was there a moment where it was, you know, I know your mum tried to make it into a game for you, but...
Once it was, because you had this big iron door, you pulled it down, put the bar across, and once it was so near, well, what it was, that's Clyde Street over there, there was a school there, a landmine dropped there, and the shot of that blew the door right open, and then we was frightened. And of course we had the railway in the bottom of our garden, so we was lucky they never bombed that, but they never did, touch wood. But apart from that, you know, and that's when we lost our dog, because the dog ran because we were so frightened, and it never come back again. That was our only casualty during the war.
Okay. So your house didn't ever receive a direct hit?
No. We got a lot of damage done.
Right.
I mean, I can remember on my 14th birthday, that was when the first doodlebug fell. Somebody told my mum, she was going shopping, and somebody said that the shop in the high street had got offal in. Well, offal was off rations. So she said, "I'm going up to line up for some offal, that's liver and hearts." Well, somebody else said to her, they got saucepans coming in at Lewisham, at New Cross Woolworths. So she was going to go there. But then somebody said, they got offal. So she thought, "Oh, I've got saucepans, I need food." So she went down there. Lucky she did, otherwise she'd have been dead. Because it was a direct hit on Woolworths. But I was sitting in the kitchen, what we called the scullery, and you had a kitchen range in there, because the Irishman was in doing what we called our living room, doing it up because it had been badly blasted in there. And I was sitting there reading, and when the thing fell on New Cross Woolworths, it blew the fire all out. I was covered in soot and everything, and I cried. And this Irishman's wiping the soot off me, he's saying, "Don't cry, it's your birthday, you'll cry all year round." But I said, "Where's my mum?" You know, because I thought she was up there, you know. But she wasn't. And all of a sudden she come tearing in. Yeah, and then another day when we got frightened was, I was at Clyde Street School, no, Stanley Street School at the time. And was coming home from school, and this German plane come through. How it got through, I do not know. And it was firing at the children and the teachers. 3 of our teachers died and 24 of our children died in that school. And we was running home, And my mum knew, somebody said, because you could hear them going, and she said, she went running out and the milkman grabbed her and she said, oh, I've got to go and get my kids. And she kicked the poor milkman's legs to pieces because he grabbed her into the... Outside the pub, there used to be a men's toilet, you remember them? And he grabbed her in there and wouldn't let her go. And she's kicked the legs nearly out of him. And but then he looked out the door, he said, here they are now, they're on the doorstep. But we was frightened then because we thought they was going to kill us. You could see him in the plane, he was so low. You could see him. And I thought, what? We thought then, you know, oh, he didn't look as if he would murdering people, you know, but he was.
Did you manage to look at him in the eyes?
No.
Or see what
no,
the expression?
No, running.
No.
We're trying to run. But you had to keep dodging, like, you know. Yeah, two of my friends was killed. They were shot in the back that day. But apart from that, I was all right. Touch wood. And my sister was all right. But... And my brother wasn't there, he was still at Bruton. So that was all right then, you know. But I mean, that's how many schools we went to. We went to Lucasville, Stanley Street, Clifton Rise, John Evelyn, Catholic school. And then the last school I ever, then Frankham Street School. The last school I ever went to was Crete Road. I'd been to lots of different schools.
I mean, I know it's hard to say, but would you say that, and I'm sure it would have, but did it affect your learning, do you think?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, because not only that, I was very lazy. I don't mind admitting it. And I used to sleepwalk, but tell people where I was walking to. And my doctor said that wasn't right. So he went round the school and he said, she's not to do anything she don't want to do. So, and in them days, you had the one teacher take you right through all the lessons. So she'd say, it's a geography next, Jean, do you want to do it? Or do you want to go down and help the infants teacher with the children? I'd say, I'll go and help the infants teacher. I can't tell you how many pairs of pyjamas I made in a sewing class for the bombed out children. Or knitted socks for the soldiers. But see, it was my fault, really. They should have said, no, you've got to do it. But my doctor had told them that I wasn't to. But I used to play on it, you know. Like when you had to read round a class and I'd stand up and I didn't want to read round a class. And I'd go, and I'd say, sit down, Jean, all right. And I'd sit down. But... that wouldn't let you get away with it there.
I bet the other children were so jealous.
Eh?
I bet the other children in your class were very jealous.
Yeah, I suppose they would. I know one day I was talking and they said, go stand behind the blackboard. There's one of them blackboards that swung over, you know? Now, she'd have got summoned if she'd done it today. And my friend said, all we could see was the toes of your shoes. She said, and I'm saying to... the girl next to me, I like her shoes, she's not had them long. And all of a sudden, the lesson finished, so she swung the blackboard over, she forgot she'd put me behind it, knocked me out cold, and she said, your legs and the bottom half of your body just shot into the clouds. They had to get an ambulance and take me to Miller Hospital, because I had concussion. I mean, if it had been today, she'd have got summoned. But they could do what they liked you then. I mean, if you got the cane at school, you never went home and told your mum because you got another whack because you must have done something wrong. But they was more lenient when the war was on, like, you know, at school. Well, they had to be, really, didn't they? I mean, I can't tell you how many uncles I had that got killed in North Africa. None of them did. They'd say, well, I used to hop the wagon, and they'd say, why wasn't you? Oh, miss, one of my uncles got killed in North Africa. It was terrible. I never knew I had an uncle out there, but I did. But I didn't know he was in North Africa at the time, or else I wouldn't have said it. But he was all right. He came through the war all right. But I used to say, Well, a lot of them did. They'd say, my dad's been took prisoner of war, and he was stationed in England, you know.
So people just made it up? Just
yeah, the
to
kids
be,
used right. to do that. They hadn't gone to school, like, you know. And we had a schoolboy man, and he had half glasses. And if he caught you, God help you, he hit you round the head. I know once he caught me, I'd been to the pictures, and I'll never forget it, because I went to see this film. It was called Hello Frisco, Hello. And the second film, because it was two features, was Paul Robeson in Sanders of the River. Just coming out, and all of a sudden this big hand come round. Why ain't you at school? My uncle got killed in North Africa this morning.
He's like, pull another one.
But, you know, I mean, they was more lenient with you then, though. I mean, not like it is today, you go to different classes and that. I mean, you had the one teacher from when you went to school until you left. Because when you went up, she went up with you. So God help you if she had a grudge against you. Because it went right away through. But they used to say to me, what they used to do after that, they used to say, go and make the staff coffee. Because they knew I couldn't stand the smell of coffee. That's what. But, or go and stand outside the door. I think, oh, I don't mind standing. I sit on the floor. So I told you to come out your door. I told you to stand outside the door, not sit. I didn't like school. My sister did. But I didn't like school. Well, we had to leave when we was 14 anyway and go work.
Jeannie, can you remember when you went to school and when you sort of met your friends at school, had any of them sort of lost their houses?
Yeah.
Were they bombed out? And how did they react? What was the feeling like every day when you came in?
Oh, well, you felt sad for them, like, you know, because they had no home. And they would be in, like, they'd have to go into, like, church hall or something like that. And they'd lost all their clothes in there. And my mum used to say to us, like, see what you can spare. And take it down to them and that, you know. Take them to school with you and see what you could spare. But we couldn't spare a lot because we didn't have a lot ourselves. You know, because when the war was on, you couldn't get buy new things and that, you know. Because there was the ration. I mean, you had to have coupons for clothes, everything. But, you know what was the last thing that come off of rationing? Do you know what it was?
Was it sweets?
Yeah, sweets. That was 6 years after the war, before the sweets came off the rationing. I thought that was terrible.
Amazing.
Yeah, but you got an ounce of tea a week each, ounce of butter, one egg, ounce of sugar, meat, 2 ounces of meat you got. But you couldn't have a joint because, I mean, there was only what me and mum, my sister and my mum, that was three of us. So you just 3 2 ounces wouldn't be a joint, would it? You know, but sometimes a big family they would, but then they'd have nothing all the week. Yeah, but I mean, I've known children in the war for their lunch go to the little shop where we lived and have a penny worth of broken biscuits for their dinner. But they survived. I know once they said my mum was suffering from malnutrition because she was giving us her rations. So our doctor, who was Fred with one of the American doctors down the camp, he was telling him and he gave her these little round sweets like that. With jelly inside. He said, now you're to take one of these. He used to call her Nelly Girl because he grew up with my mum. Now, Nelly Girl, you've got to take one of these every day. She said, all right, I will. And just you, not the children. They're not good for the children. All right, she'd say. She used to give us one to go to school with every day. One in them happens going out. But they was a full meal in that little... Because that's what the Yanks rationed. If they got stranded or anything, that's like that little little weenie sweet was like a full meal. Had everything in it they needed. Mm. Yeah. And then, of course, we struck lucky because one of my mum's cousins was stationed down the cattle market, and he was an American. And he'd bring home, he's just to come home and stay with my Aunt Lil, and he'd bring home big tins of jam like that, and tins of bacon. And it was very thin bacon in greaseproof paper. It was lovely though, and cheese. And my Aunt Lil used to put it in the oven with cheese on top and bake it in the oven. It was lovely. Mm. And I still do that now sometimes. But you'd line up, you'd go and line up at the baker's, because you had to have your cubes for your bread. But if you'd line up for cakes, like fairy cakes, and you'd make custard and have them on the fairy cakes for your pudding. So you never, you couldn't say that we starved. You know, I mean, I don't think any child really suffered from malnutrition, only them that didn't have very good parents, like, you couldn't. Because there's a lot of people that can't sort things out, aren't there? But, no, we can't say we starved. And my mum could never get over it, because I loved powdered egg. She used to say to me, "Now we're having egg for tea tonight. Can I have powdered egg?" I'd say. "She's got fresh egg there, but the chickens are like, no, I want powdered egg. But you can only make an omelette out of it, you know. But I love powdered eggs. There was something about my life." And she used to say, "Oh, she is funny."
Have you had them since?
Eh?
Have you had them since the war finished?
No, you can't hear now, can you? If you did, I would have had them. Because I really liked them. Mm. But my mum used to use powdered egg in cakes, if she made cakes in there. And then my dad was a chef in the Air Force. And he came home on leave one day and he said to her, "If you want to make a cake, Neil, and you've got any fruit and that, and you've got some eggs, if you haven't got enough eggs, put 2 tablespoonfuls of custard powder in with it, and that'll take the place of eggs." And so she did.
Jean, can you tell us a little bit about the games that you played during the Blitz and during the war years?
Well, we didn't play out a lot, you know, because... But we played outside the door. We used to play this game. My mum used to stand on the doorstep, and we had a long rope, and one of us would be over the other side because there was hardly any traffic in them days. And we'd turn the rope and we'd all skip, and take turns of running in. I told my husband not to keep following me. And we'd take turns of skipping. And then we'd play that where you've got 4 sticks, you put them up against the wall, 3 like that, and 1 across the top, mm-hmm. and you threw a ball at it. And if you knocked them down, you run, and they tried to catch you. I think it was called tic-tac-toe, I'm not sure.
It sounds quite like cricket as well.
Eh?
It sounds like it's sort of come from cricket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to play marbles in the gutter. And another one we played down the shelter was what my mum used to do. When the cherries was out, we'd have the cherries, and she'd clean the cherry off, you know, the stones, and then she'd get a shoebox and cut arches out in it, and then put numbers up, and then we flicked the cherry off to see if we could get them in the highest number, and that's what we played mostly in the shelter, like, you know, or snap, snakes and ladders, all ball games like that, you know. But me and my sister played snakes and ladders here the other day.
Nice.
Great big ball game.
Brilliant. And how about in the playground, Jean? What sort of games did you play at school with your mates?
Oh, we never went in the playground. No, we went in the hall because in case the warning went. So we had to be near the shelter, like, you know. So we never went in the playground. The boys used to have to say, "Please, miss, can I go outside?" Because their toilet was in the playground. The boys' toilets was in the playground, so they used to. But the teacher used to go out with them, make sure they come back in. And But we used to play in the hall. And, but it wasn't really like playing in a playground, because it was organised play, like, you know. You couldn't go mad, run around, and things like that. And, but we was, when we was at home, if it was light in the summer, we used to go out and play for a while. But we couldn't move away from the door in case the warden went, you know, because my mum used to worry. My sister, when she got 14, you know what she used to do when the warning went? Because we had no bathroom. So, oh, right, she'd get the towel, so I'm going round the bath and have a bath. My mum used to cry. The woman next door used to say to her, "You're a wicked little cow, you are."
Well, so instead of going down the shelter, she'd go into the bathroom.
She didn't like... my sister suffers from claustrophobia. We didn't know what it was when she was a kid, but she couldn't stand being down the shower shut in. So she used to go around the bath and have a bath. My mum used to get upset. And on top of the shower, you know, because Anderson's shower has got all dirt on top. On the top, my mum grew tomatoes and marigolds. And also, she used to always whitewash the garden wall right up to the bedroom window. But the warden come round one night and he said, "The German planes can see that." And they got mad and they went all over it, and my mum had just done it. As soon as the war was over again, it was whitewashed. Because they used to half stone all their window ledges and everything. And steps. And it used to fascinate me, because when they'd done the steps, they used to do half circle of the pavement as well. Wash half circle of the pavement. And you never went out and shook your mats after 8:30. Because that's when the road sweeper come round. So anything that come off your mats, he swept away. Right.
I'm interested in, what do you see as the biggest, if you look at children growing up now.
What?
If you look at children growing up now, like your age, the age you had during the Blitz, what do you see as the biggest difference between how children grow up nowadays and how it was for you?
I don't think they could do it.
Why not?
Because they get everything they want nowadays, don't they? I mean, they don't make their own entertainment. But we did before the war, we had to, because we only had the radio.
Yeah.
So they never had computers or tellies or anything like that, or telephones or anything like that. So you had to make your own entertainment, unless you was lucky enough to have a piano and somebody could play it. Nice. But we was all right, because we had, my gran bought us when we was little, a wind-up gramophone. And we had all Nat Ganella's records, so we used to play them. But you had to make your own entertainment. So I don't think they'd be asked to do it today, because they don't know how to do entertain themselves, do they? I mean, if you took their waspings away from where they play the games on and that, they wouldn't know what to do. I mean, on the telly. I mean, I know, because I've got two young great nephews, and they, especially Leon, he's in a wheelchair, he's spina bifida. He's on that Xbox all the time, you know, and he said, "It's good. You want to do it, Jean?" Colin, my nephew, he said, "She can't do it, I've tried." I said, "No, I don't want to do it." Because Colin used to have one, I mean, he was 30, but he still had one. And I'd say, "No, I don't want to do it, Colin. Wait till I've gone to bed and then you play it." But it didn't interest me, you know. So
you're saying you made up a lot of...
Eh?
You used a lot of your imagination...
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
when you played games and that, yeah, we had our dolls and that. We used to have tea parties with the dolls. And not so much my sister, because she was a tomboy. You know, she think that was just silly. But, no, I used to get up the street, and she'd come in and have, or sit on the step with them. And my mum used to bring out lemonade for us and that. And we'd have it in a little, because we had a tea, kids' tea set, we'd pour it out, make out it was tea. Mm. And that, you know, but we did, you had to make, it was make, mostly it was make believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, so it, I suppose you could say even the war was make believe to you. Because, you know, I mean, I never forget once there was a raid and the street facing us got bombed. And this lady had a beautiful orange bush, rose bush in her garden. And they'd got killed. And I went out and I come back with a bunch of these orange roses. My mum did hit me. I said, but they're all dead, mum. She said, you don't mean to say you can nick their roses? She said, you could be put in prison for that. She said, that's the looting, that is. I cried my eyes out. I didn't, I was only young. I suppose I was about 10. But I didn't think I was doing any wrong because there was, nobody was there. And I thought, they're dead. So I picked them.
That's interesting what you're saying, that for you the war was also a little bit like... It's interesting that the war for you was also a little bit like a game.
Yeah.
Then. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't like to go for it again.
No.
Because I'd know now, wouldn't I? I mean, but when you're children, you don't know so much now. And as I say, my mum made it a game for us.
Yeah.
And like you used to say, with the thunder.
Yeah.
And that's God got the ump and he's stamping, you know, and things like that. We believed that.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't think I could do it there. Well, I know I couldn't.
Why not?
See, and every year we used to go op picking, even during the war. And we used to watch the planes go over, our fighter planes go over, and then count them when they come back. And we used to say like things like, oh, 7 missing today. And then, or the Germans would come over and they'd go up and fight them. But the Germans, we used to call them some names. And as our boys parachuted out, so the Germans used to machine gun them as they come down, you know, which they didn't have to do. No, I didn't think they had to. And, but, see, I couldn't, same as, I could never go hopping again now. Though I loved hop picking, because you lived in a hut, and there was a bench across it like that, and you had straw on it, but you put them in mattresses, like, and you had to go and get water, you had to go to the cookhouse and have a wood fire and that. I don't think I could do that then. Well, I'd never get up on the bleeding bench for one thing. And up the field, and sometimes it was thick mud where it rained and that. Oh, I couldn't do it now. I used to love going there before, but now I could never do it. Well, they don't do it now. Mostly it's done by machine. But they do now and again advertise for pickers. Small farms, like, you know. But I wouldn't like to go.
Yeah. Jean, can I just ask, you talk about, you know, after the Blitz was over and it was, you'd been evacuated and then you were in London for the flying bombs.
Yeah.
As you got older and older through the course of the war, because it was 5 years, wasn't it? It's quite a long time. Did you start to realise how dangerous it actually was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, when, especially when the flying bombs started. Because doodlebugs, you still got a warning with them. And then they cut out. But the flying bombs, you got no warning.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You could be walking along 1 minute and the whole street would be gone.
Mm.
You know, and, oh yeah, as you got older, I mean, because I was, well, 8 when the war broke out, and I was about, I suppose, 14, when, just before I was 14 when the war finished.
Mm.
But, when you got older, you realise then that it's, this is a dangerous situation, like, you know. And I wouldn't dream of going out if the warning was on. I mean, and you used to have blackouts up. And if a little weeny bit of light like that was showing, the air raid warden would come round and say, put that light out! And, so, you know, when you went, you was down the air raid shelter, going down there, you had your torch, but you had a black bit in the front there, the torch, so that it only showed on the ground to get down to the shelter. But we went to the public shelter once, me and my mum and my sister, and that was facing us, and it was under a laundry shop. We never went again. we didn't like it. Well, one thing, this woman was playing the piano, singing, "Who is Sylvia? What is she?" And she had a terrible voice. They was all brown. And then this woman come in. She'd lived up Warwickshire Street. She'd lived there years and years, since before the First World War. But she happened to be German, and they wouldn't let her in the air raid shelter. My mum was saying, "That's not right." She was crying. And they was all saying, "No, she ain't coming in here. She's a bloody Nazi." But she wasn't. All her children's grown up. And her sons was in the forces fighting for us. But they wouldn't let her in. And my mum said, "We ain't going over there no more. We never." Yeah. But you get some of the things you can't remember. Like, I took Colin to the War Museum, and they had a shelter there. And we was in there, and Colin was saying, "Was you frightened of the guns? You could hear the guns going." And I said, "No." And then all of a sudden, I said, "Come on, let's go." And we're going out, and I was holding on his jacket, as I thought, and I said, "Cool, did you hear that one? That was Big Bertha from France." And a Yank's voice said, "Was it really?" I was holding on to a Yank's coat, and Colin had disappeared. I was looking everywhere. He was in the Spitfire, sitting in the Spitfire in the big hole. I could have hit him.
And Jean, just going back to the sort of air raid, when you came out the next morning of the shelter, and I guess there were times when you might have seen more and more buildings damaged.
Yeah.
And on your sort of journey to the school and stuff, I guess more and more during the Blitz, there were buildings that are damaged. Like, how did that make you feel? Or what do you remember thinking about it at the time?
I used to think about who got killed there, you know. Mm. I mean, I know when one of the houses got bombed in Adolphus Street, the woman had not long had a little baby, and it was caught up in the privet fence. It was dead, but it was caught up in the privet bush, you know. And as we was going to school, we could see it there, you know. And that was very upsetting, very. And then, of course, when the Yanks was here, that was upsetting as well, because down Deptford High Street, because the war was still on, down Deptford High Street, on the road, side of the road, Deptford High Street, St Paul's Church was on, all chalked up along there. Well, there was no niggers on this side of the road. And they was all Americans fighting for the same country. And one of them was going out with a girl, and her house was through the churchyard, and he's walking her home. And they impound him on the railings. He was still there next morning, and we used to go through there to go to school, but we couldn't go through because he was still on the railings. He was dead, of course. But the white Yanks had impaled him on the railings.
And he was American as well?
Yeah, black American. And then I was down the High Street one day, and somebody said to me, "Your nan is having a fight with an American MP. So I've gone running down there to the pub in New King Street. And she was hitting him with her handbag. And he's got this truncheon, and I said to him, "Lay that on my nan, and she's got sons, and they will kill you." I said, and so will I. So he said, "Well, she's hit me with her handbag." I said, "So what?" So I said, "What's the trouble?" Well, the owner of the husband's daughter was caught in this black Yank, and he'd gone in, she took him in there for a drink. Now, the owner, and then he come out, the owner, and he said to these MPs, "This is my pub. This is England, my pub, and I have who I like in my pub. Them white bees there are not telling me who I can have in my pub." He said, "So you tell them to go, because I'll have who I want in my pub." And they said, "Well, then," the MP said, "Well, then the white Americans won't come in here." "Couldn't care less," he said, "because there's plenty of black ones there anyway."
So, Jean, do you think that How did you think Deptford had changed after the war? How was it different to before the war had started?
Sorry.
Deptford, you know, the area.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think it changed after the war finished?
Well, once the stores come back out again, you know, because they couldn't come out during the war, and that because they couldn't get the fruit and that. But and my dad had was right at the top, right outside the baker's. He had a fruit stall. His name was Jasper, by the way. And he was the what's the name of the traders? What do you call it? Committee man of the traders, street traders.
Okay.
And also he was deputy head of the British Legion in Deptford. Mm. And well, nothing had really changed in Deptford, only that well, things like you couldn't leave your doors open anymore, mm. where you could before the war. Mm. I mean, we used to have a big stone at our street door, and that kept the door open. But you couldn't do that after the war. And Deptford people didn't break into Deptford people's houses, like, you know. And if they did, we had some people, like the fellows that are Deptford people, they would die kill them, you know, because they'd so go somewhere where people's well insured and that, not poor people, that's, you know. And then things like that, and then of course the schools built up, but it took a long time for them to clear the damage. I mean, Germany was cleared long before we was, and they lost the bleeding war. But we had where the houses was bombed, and they had like these big pits full of water, so that if another house got bombed, they'd have water there to put it out in there. And we used to play, we used to get told off when we played in them, because they said it was dangerous. But the boys used to stand off the top and dive in. But apart from that, no, nothing really changed, really, except that, as I say, you couldn't, and you couldn't go out so much after dark, you know, because you never knew who was going to attack you. And because by then, you see, it wasn't only Deptford people living here. It was people from the East End, because they got really badly bombed. I mean, I can remember when the docks at the East End got bombed. For 4 nights, it was like daylight with the flames. You could see them right from here, like, you know. And it was like daylight. And, I mean, so a lot of people got bombed there. And the Isle of Dogs, they got bombed. I'll tell you something so funny about that. I worked on Greenwich Pier, okay. And we had a lady there, and she was a bit deaf, and she used to come and help us. And she was doing these 99s for this man. He wanted 4 99s, and she was putting them in the stand, She's doing the last one. And he said, when the war was on, I was in the Luftwaffe. He said, and I had to bomb the Naval College. Did I hit it? She said, did he say German? He said he was in the German Air Force and he had to bomb the Naval College. And did he hit it? She went, why you be? Right in his face with his 99. No, she said, you hit the Isle of Dogs. I was buried for 3 days, pregnant with twins. She said, that's what you hit. Well, his wife said, what a terrible thing to say to somebody that lived here. Did I hit the Naval College? I mean, he should have used his noddle, yeah. Shouldn't he? She made me laugh. The pier master come running out. What's the trouble? What's the trouble? I told him. They've gone off.
It's just might be rubbing against them.
So, he said, well, I don't blame her, but it was so wild. He had the flake stuck across his face like that.
Jean, How do you think the area, like around here and in Douglas Way, where you live now, how do you feel that Deptford's changed since
It's changed, like, that it's not neighbourly anymore. I mean, right, even after the war for a few years, everybody watched everybody else, not looked after everybody else. Mm. But now they don't. I mean, you could have a neighbour now die, and they ain't there. They're flat for 3 weeks and nobody knows. But where I live now, they're not too bad.
Mm.
But I've got a disabled flat, as I say, facing the used to be the coroner's court. And they, if they don't see you're about, they will come and knock on the door. Let's see if you're all right, or phone you up and say you're all right. But I mean, they're not like it used to be. I mean, I can remember when I was young, I mean, if people had to go to work, they didn't put their children in a nursery. They said to a neighbour, if I give you a cotton of bob a week, will you have the children for me? Yeah, you know, and they would give them their tea and everything. But now there's nothing like that now. You know, it's changed, as I say. Now, all them flats they've done in going over what used to be Seager Evans, they're all people not from round here, and they're like yuppies. And why do they want to... You know what one of them said once in the paper? The market in Deptford High Street should be got rid of. It's disgusting. It takes the price of our dwellings down. We've had that market here for over 400 years. Who are they to come here and tell us they've got to get rid of the market? Not come down the market if they don't want to. But even the market's not the same. Because used to be like, as I say, there again, it was nearly all Deptford people that had stores in the market, but now they're not. Because they die, like my dad died, he had nobody to pass it on to. And Sheila and Elfie's got it now. But they're not... You couldn't say you could... but where I live, you can, but I wouldn't go anywhere else. I mean, before I moved into this disabled flat, I lived in a masonette, just across the road there. Well, the man that moved in my flat, he'd laid there for 5 weeks dead, nobody knew. That's heartbreaking, isn't it? Mm. So, but apart from that, everything's, I think, all right. I wouldn't move out of Deptford. I've always lived here and I wouldn't move out of here. You know, I can't go up the market anymore because I can't walk up there. Mm. But apart from that, you know. And we've got the, my nieces and nephews go shopping for me.
Thank you, Jean. That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you.